All right, so we're just going to open it up, and whatever's on your mind, whatever you want to talk about regarding the subject, and when Rodney comes back, he's going to join me. Yeah.
One thing I bump into with yoga is anger. First of all, there's a passion, and I'm justified in this anger.
Yes.
I'm stuck in the story.
Of course.
And then as I investigate, the anger can be released. And then the next thing that can often happen, okay, I'm not angry here anymore. And it's almost like the last hurrah, saying, wait a minute, maybe you should be angry. I wonder if...
That's cute,
like,
yeah.
I don't have that anger.
No, to me, that's just pure conditioning coming in. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely conditioning in the form of thought of, oh, no. You know, if I'm not angry, I'm going to get hurt. I'm not protecting myself through my anger. You know, because we don't really completely embody the understanding that anger puts us in great peril. You know, it's not our friend. It's not really protective, because we lose our minds when we're angry. You know, we don't know what we're doing when we're angry. So it really is the opposite of something protecting us. But we don't know that. Of course, we don't know that. And I you know, how I'm hearing this is that conditioning is coming in of, oh no, you know, what if I'm not? Because of course I should be. Yeah, yeah. So I would hear it and let it go. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah.
The thing that I have a lot of curiosity about is righteousness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Righteous anger. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can, you know, recall deeply experiencing righteousness around unfairness.
Yes. Yes.
And there just seems to be something healthy about that. Indignation.
Yes.
So,
yes, I do, and I think Rodney will probably, I'd like to bring him in on this when he comes back too, but I do think that anger can be a signal sometimes that something is wrong and something does need to be done. You know, I really do. And I'm thinking of just a dramatic example, you know, just a very dramatic example of Rosa Parks, who was definitely angry on that bus. And probably things would have been quite different if she didn't listen to that anger and then have the courage to act. You know, so I do feel that anger can be a bit of a wake up. You know, being in an abusive relationship, of course, experiencing anger, right? And then it being a wake up that something needs to happen, that you need to not just, I have to accept it, I have to, you know, all of this baloney, but one has to, you know, respond in an appropriate way. But I think it's hugely different having a moment of anger or a few moments of anger, something that has that effect of waking you up, and then, you know, getting into it and dwelling on it and it becoming bigger. You know, I have a friend who, in protesting the Vietnam War, she realized that it was kind of two-pronged for her, that she really believed in that peaceful protesting that she was doing. And at the same time, she was thrilled to put on her armband and to feel that sense of power. And to, you know, she realized that she had a lot of anger, personal anger, not about what was happening in the world, that was getting all mixed up in it. And, you know, to her credit, she was aware of that at that time. So I think it gets quite confused and mixed up with our conditioning. So it's not as, you know, as pure as it appears to be. So using it as a wake up and then you know, acting wisely, you know. Because sometimes people ask, like, how would I be able to change anything in this world that so much needs change without my anger? You know? And if you can work with it and let it go, in its place can come compassion. Yeah. Because if indifference comes in its place, then you need to practice more. Yeah. Because, yeah, indifference is, to me, is kind of another form of anger in its own way. It's a withdrawal or a passivity. Yeah.
I like the distinction between the intensity of the anger and the righteousness of the anger and acting it out. I mean, to have that space in between, to do something different than you might have done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You might want to add to this. The question was about righteous anger. Do you want anything? Yes. Say anything?
Yes.
Oh, do we have to?
You just the
what? Oh, just the recorder. Okay. Oh, brother. I'm going to be like double up with the...
Why?
Right here?
I could talk into it. Wrong one, dude.
So we have to do this every time.
I'll just hold it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd like to go off on just a little bit different tangent, because I think Narayan intimated something that was very important. That is that in a moment of anger, something has been blocked that we often care about to a great deal, care about a great deal. Something that often it can be a sense of justice, or it can be a sense of fairness, or what is right for the world. And someone or something, the what of our anger seems to have blocked or thwarted the justice that we sort of demand of life, that this object, person, thing, event seems to have obscured. And in that moment, because we feel as if we have been separated from our heart, right? Because what we have cared about has been blocked, we feel extraordinarily vulnerable in terms of our power. Right? You should feel powerless. So what does anger do but gives you power? Because it allows you to stand on your righteousness. And if you understand what righteousness is, righteousness, you are the most empowered you'll ever be. Your sense of you is so full of what it feels life should be offering that now it's been blocked and it cannot offer, and what you're going to do personally to right this wrong, that you then vent you, from the sense of being depleted in your power and the vulnerability of being out of control, you then find your way back into control through anger. Okay, so? So that's a very important... So as long as the what stays the central figure of your regaining your power, then your power is more important to you than what you do within your power. And so you'll do whatever you need to maintain your righteousness in relationship to the vulnerability that suffered if you released it. And had to put your, so we have to know what we're up against here. The momentum of the conditioning of self, of myself, and feeling myself empowered as me, is at the root of our willingness to go with our anger rather than to see it. And what we're undermining when we want to be aware of our anger is our sense of self-power, empowerment within self, self-definition. And that... there's nothing we loathe to give up, because we, in general, behind the scenes back there, subtly, we know we're nothing. But now, when that's a psychological knowledge, now we think we're nothing, or nobody allows us to be anything, or, see, that's different. That's the psychological sense of not being heard. But behind all of that, we know we're nothing. And we're fighting the realization of that knowing we're nothing by being empowered within our anger.
Well, I mean, I think that's one element of it. The point that you made earlier, though, is there appear to me, I'm not really expert in this, but there appear to me situations, Rosa Parks being a good example of, she felt something that was very strong within her, and she felt moved to do something about it, not aggressive action, but some type of action that I believe was prolonged over time, too. It wasn't an action at that moment, but set in motion other people feeling similar feelings. So that really is a conflict, because this is a complex situation. You could get lost in feeling meaningless and nothing, but I'm not sure she felt that way as she saw this what most people would see as an injustice, I think.
Right.
And she stayed with it, and other people joined her. I just think it's a difficult...
So I'm not talking about being passive. I'm not talking about being passive. But the anger itself is a very divisive emotion if you act from the energy of anger. That is, the anger itself says, I'm right and you're wrong, basically. And so it pits you and your view of the world against everyone else's. That's a very different way of acting than to say to yourself, I have as much right to sit. See, that's really Rosa Parks sitting on that front seat of the bus is not an act of divisiveness to me, although from the white perspective it certainly could be seen. But from her perspective, it's a sense of interconnectedness. I belong here as much as anyone. So often our course of action from justice is really a way of mending the heart rather than further dividing the heart. And I think it's very important to understand that we're not suggesting non-effective action.
Engagement,
exactly, at all. But rather how that engagement manifests and what energy is the intention of that engagement is really the crucial.
Yes. And I also would say, this is a little bit off your question, but just in general, this whole question about power, is that we don't understand that it is deeply empowering to take responsibility for whatever it is that we're experiencing. It's deeply empowering because then wise action can come out of that, you know, instead of confused action or rash action or, you know, unwise action or harmful action or whatever it might be.
She had taken action and been killed. Would that be wise action or not?
The effect doesn't determine the action. What happens to you when you do it isn't determine the intention.
Yeah, I mean, she might have been just fine with that because she believed in it so much. And because, to me, it's an act of harmony. What she did in that movement was an act of harmony, even though, of course, it wouldn't
harmony.
Be of harmony. Harmony, yes.
Sure,
right. Of course, of course. But that really is, you know, not important.
Personal experience around looking at my anger within the political realm and kind of owning it and owning how at times it felt like the only statement of power I was making was my anger.
Yeah.
And in the last 6-8 months, I've made a commitment to renounce both my anger and my cynicism. I'm not being very successful with it.
But Suze, that's not the point. That's
what
good for you.
What has come up in my face all the time is my vulnerability.
Yes.
Yes.
And yes.
I think that is a real challenge.
Yes.
When we look at the fairness justice.
Yes.
And when you act... I haven't done much of this yet, but I'm working with it, of trying to act from my vulnerability.
Yes, beautiful.
Because I think that's where that connection
yes.
comes from. It's, there's not an easy answer.
No.
I think that's all part of that piece.
Yes, just to reframe the question, in terms of when you feel vulnerable, so what is the... So you have to see the benefit. You see the disadvantage of vulnerability. Is
the benefit is that my heart is open.
Yes, exactly. The heart is open.
It's scary to be involved and engaged without the anger.
Yes.
And that's what I'm just starting, you know, I'm trying to look at.
And you also...
That's okay.
You can see where it can take... You can see the Dharma path, though, in the vulnerability, because you're giving up your sense of protection. You're giving up your defenses. And essentially, you have to give up your defenses in order to feel connected.
And I haven't yet figured out all the comes from that because it's so unfamiliar. It's very unfamiliar territory.
Unknown to you.
Unknown to me.
Unknown. And what cannot be known. Cannot be known. You can get used to acting from the vulnerability, but you'll never know how you act from the vulnerability in terms of specifics. The state of being acting from vulnerability can be known to you. It can feel more comfortable,
yeah.
Right?
And but it's part of the vulnerability is to not know
it. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that is a really powerful intention. Yeah.
That is a powerful intention.
Yeah.
And very hard to keep.
That's, you know, but that's okay, because that's why it's a practice. You're going against the tide here. You're going against every bone of your conditioning. It's very, very powerful. And it should be hard, you know? And there'll be moments when it isn't.
Yes.
It's a certain shift from the positive. I have a 2.5-year-old son. And so in parenting anger, I kind of want to save off the therapy bills in 15 years. What I'm doing is I'm doing what they're teaching now in the parenting classes.
Oh, you're feeling powerless. He's 2.5.
To a 2.5 year old.
You're feeling powerless. It's okay to stomp your feet. It's not okay to hit me with your words.
Oh.
Okay.
Huh.
So that's what I'm doing. And if my anger, this is our kitchen, you know, in the kitchen, if my anger comes up, mom is feeling frustrated. I'm not frustrated at you, you know, I'm not mad at you. I'm having the experience of frustration, something like that.
So that's does he understand the word frustration at 2.5?
Yeah, I say powerless. Okay. And I'm wondering if in 15 years he's going to be sitting there in the therapist. My mother never really let me experience come to anger in a dual world. She cut off duality and went right into, you know. So I don't know how. I want some advice on how you properly. Yeah. And I'm trying to learn anger in myself, you know. All
right.
But what is really, you know, reasonable for dealing with a 2.5-year-old's anger? And he's growing vindictive about his friend taking things. And,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's okay.
Yeah, right.
I can see your attitude. You can keep this up with a little tinge of sarcasm.
I have a bit of a personal story about this because when I was a child, I had temper tantrums, and the middle child. And my mother, I thought, you know, it's not like there was a huge amount of skillfulness in a lot of different directions in many ways, but this my mother did something at a certain point that I thought was so helpful. She really made it clear to me that my anger was not who I was. You know? She made it really clear. It was kind of like, let's see how we can take care of this together. You know? So that distinction between the behavior and the emotion and it's inherently who I am.
Yeah.
She was able to make that distinction. And I think, I don't know, just because it had a positive effect eventually on me, that it was a skillful thing to do.
It's just, is that the adolescent thing to do versus the
2.5-year-old? Right, yes. Well, remember, you know, the practicing part, too. That, of course, he's 2.5, everything is unjust when he doesn't get what he wants, you know, because, of course, from a 2.5-year-old viewpoint, yes is the only acceptable answer. So that's what he's experiencing, and, you know, I mean, I think that a parent's job is really to teach him gratitude, you know, kind of really to focus on the gratitude part of everything.
Well, no.
missed all that. To focus on the gratitude and not should. No, of course not, because then the therapy bills are really going to mount. The should. Do you have anything to add to that?
I had some things, but it kind of. I think what I would like to say is about.
So I don't know what the therapist. I mean, that's a whole world of, and they're probably much. They are much more knowledgeable on how to bring up a reasonable child governing their anger. But the basic point I think we're making is that their anger itself is legitimate for all of us. There's a legitimacy that we have to acknowledge that the behavior that comes out of it can be illegitimate. And so that needs to be curtailed, but the fact that we are angry is legitimate, okay? And it's for us through our investigation, which a two and a half year old does not have the capacity to do, but to be able to look at where how we're making that emotion legitimate through the stories of our lives. And I think that's what Narayan was saying. We make it legitimate. But it doesn't mean that the only way you can perceive that it's a legitimate emotion is to hold it legitimately. And then to do some investigations on the derivation of that within oneself. So for a 2.5-year-old doesn't have that capacity, I would think, to be able to. But he can be held, can't he? And he can be confirmed within that emotion so that he doesn't think he's bad for having it. And yet he can be restricted in what he's allowed to do from that emotion without giving him the idea that the emotion itself is bad. So that to me feels in the right direction where he will be able to express his anger legitimately but in skillful ways rather than unskillful. So that's
A lot of times I hear in Buddhism is just don't have your anger. Figure out some way to get rid of it, melt it. That's my old family story, so I'm sure that's why I hear it. But I was just in a situation the other night when I was at a meeting and I was starting to talk and another woman decided she had to sort of cut things off and get them back on track, which wasn't where I was going. I mean, she said that. I'm not just assuming that. And I'm like... And because I did get angry, I didn't have a response, and I feel like in retrospect, the response would have been, instead of getting particularly angry, or even if I was angry, to be able to say, just a minute, Susan, I wasn't finished, you know. And to me, that addresses more the power issue, because I was feeling, you know, negated or, you know, without power.
Yeah.
And my anger kept me that way.
Well, one of the things I think what's really basic to understand is that when we're having it is not the time for us to become aversive of it. As soon as something comes up, it's legitimate that it's arising, and we have to give it that sense of legitimacy to be able to enter it.
Okay, so
I understand what you want to do, but I'm showing you that any other attitude other than wanting to discover it, look at it as legitimate, is going to have you react from it in an unskillful way. Either you're going to repress it or you're going to act it out. But when you want to discover something, think of it, okay, I really want to discover what anger is. What is this thing? It's like, oh, this is what it feels like to be angry. I have a colleague who says, well, this is what it feels like to be angry. And you put anger on the table. Now, if you have any other objective than to take it apart and see what makes it tick, then you're going to have an aversion to it, which is going to incite it as, just as Narayan was saying, you're going to infuse aversion or the anger for the anger, and you're going to fuel the fire. So you say, okay, what is going on here in me? That takes the what is no longer who I'm angry at. Now you're placing it in the anger. So what is going on in here? Not why did he do that, but what is going on in here in me? And as soon as you take the focus and put it in the right area so that you can discover what the anger is rather than why somebody did something to you, because that's never a legitimate question. The anger is in you. It's not in somebody. Nobody made you angry.
What I needed was to not victimized, self-victimized in that feeling, but to be able to just to make a normal, you know, just, you know, a kindly response. I didn't need
yes.
to respond.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's something that we need to practice, because you will notice that if you practice it, then there's not the residue of I should have said. You know? So to speak clearly and directly is something that we all need to learn, and sometimes in our family background, that's been the last thing that we could do. So now it's something to practice. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
I have a request, actually, and that is that if you would, as you speak, address the position of the recipient of the anger. In other words, my personal situation is that I am living with someone who is terribly frequently and over long term angry, and I need to deal with it, and I have a lot of ideas, but the Dharma is totally important to me, and I can't seem to bring it into this place effectively.
Yes, that's a really important question. Do you have anything you want to say?
The question is, when somebody is angry at you, pardon? If I'm right, you're saying that you live in a situation where the person is offsetting a lot of anger on you, and you don't know how to act from that.
I'm not actually asking for you to address this with an answer.
Right.
Just to weave it into your talk.
Weave it in. When lots of anger comes at us, well, how do we hold it? Right?
Yes.
That's a very... very legitimate question that I'm going to pass the microphone over to.
All right, then. Okay. I do understand you want us to just weave it in, but I would like to say a couple of things about it, too. Okay. I think this is where to stay steady within oneself is really crucial. So in terms of Dharma practice, any way that you can keep yourself embodied is really powerful, you know, because it's frightening when anger is coming towards us. We it triggers anger in ourselves. It's sad when anger is coming towards us. Something I read last night, something that Willa Cather said, she said that when... even if somebody, which is not your situation, but even if somebody is generally kind and compassionate, when they get angry, we feel like they've lost their reason. You know, they're just out of their minds, and we get frightened because anger is like that. So it's really important, I think, to stay embodied and to feel your feet touching the floor and take refuge at that moment. You know, really take refuge. Take refuge in your body. Take refuge in the awareness of your reactions, you know, because that is crucial, to be aware of how you're reacting, which might feel pretty habitual because it sounds like this situation has been happening for a good while. So to see if you can be aware of the habitual ways that you're reacting. And then, you know, maybe you can even ask that question I was suggesting before of what else is happening, so that you can move beyond the habit of the reaction and notice what other reactions are happening. And this sounds a little bit I don't know what it sounds like, but I have a helpful hint, which is to look at some part of the person's body while they're talking, like their ear. Or, you know, their hand, or something that's not disrespectful, but where you're looking a little to the side, you know, in the sutras, the Buddha speaks about when there's an attraction, like a lustful attraction that you don't want to act on. One of the ways to work with that is to kind of just look at the person's body and identify, well, you know, am I so incredibly seduced by this little bit of hair or by, you know, their elbow or something like that? And you can do the same thing with anger. You can look at the person in that way.
That is great.
Oh, wonderful.
To me, it's, there must be a word that ends in version, like adversion, like diversion or something, because I can see myself looking at the ear, which is not projecting my opinion, a lot of energy towards me, like the mouth and the eyes.
Right, exactly,
Paying attention, but I'm not totally focused on the source of the very difficult energy.
Right, right.
Two other things, and less easily done than this. One is that the reason that she affects you the way you do, outside of, I'm hoping it's not physical abuse, is that you're buying into what she's telling you about yourself. There's a pain that you have about what she's saying that you're buying into. And it's very helpful for me when I get into that situation is to go to the pain of the way I'm holding myself in this particular expression, so I can see what it is I'm responding from. And that can be very helpful. The other thing is, and Narayan will speak more about this this afternoon, one of the beauties of metta is that it tries to look not from the appearance of what's coming at me, but from where that appearance is generated. That is, if you stop at just the content of the anger, that it couples my own sense of self unworthiness and I come back at you and on it goes. But if I can see her in pain, if I can feel the fact that her anger is an expression of her own pain, because when we rail at somebody, if you look, we're in a lot of pain in ourselves, about ourselves. And once you can get through the door of seeing the anger as coming from her to you and seeing that it's coming really about her and her own pain, and this is a demonstration, this is a manifestation of that pain, you can relax a little bit and not take it quite as personally as a presentation. That relaxation helps a lot. And then you can just let this bonfire burn itself out within attention. Because if you don't pay attention, that fuels her anger. Because then you're not listening to what she thinks is so important for you to hear about your own fault or whatever it is. But if you pay attention, so you're not right in the fire, but you're paying attention to the flames and you're seeing the space around it and you're seeing the pain, it really allows a kind of cooling off and the embers kind of... And we're going to actually do an exercise this afternoon around that particular ability to attend to but not feed into that anger response. You know what? We're going to take a 15-minute break and come back for half an hour sitting. We really want to build sitting into the weekend so that we have some sense of what Narayan was talking about, is that the Buddha, the angry Buddha, so that we're going to create the Buddha from the silence and let the anger be expressed as we speak together in legitimate terms. But so we want to reinforce the Buddha by taking a 15-minute break. And we'll ring the bell in 10 minutes, and then we'll come back and sit for half an hour before lunch. Thank you.